following my way as well. Although, I should do something about it, I think. I know. Thanks. Can I ask a question? We're actually doing a lot of readings together, so it's kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
I'm going first next time, definitely. So I thought I'd do a love poem to start off with. I don't write love poems normally, but this is one. It's called Small Hungers. Your bare foot beneath the table brushes mine. A moment ago, they were kicking sand along the beach. But now we sit in a cafe, our heads at rest against a rise of pebbles. The surf pulled up to our chin, gulping back the raging sea. Each wave, an onslaught of wet delight. Clinking of cutlery like loose metal fastenings on ghostly masts. In truth, it had been a grey affair. Low tide, cold, misty, the pebbles laced with tar. So instead we have the comforting heat, clear water in a jug. Having made short work of the starters, we mull over the main course, the glare of the white cloth blinding us to reason, our ravenous toes scuttling to make sideways love on the ocean floor. You don't have to try it. So a lot of my poems, particularly in this latest collection, How to Blake a Planet, are inspired by environmental things. I was really touched by a lot of the coral reef poems that came out there. So there's a lot of poems about, that news came out a few weeks ago about the, in the last 30 years or something, we've just managed to destroy 60% of the species on the planet.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, this one, in 2014, there was a court case in Argentina was taken on behalf of an orangutan. And the idea was if we could give orangutan citizenship, it would maybe kind of benefit from that and maybe be a bit more protected. And, so anyway, it won. It won. And the court said it was now going to be called a non-human person. So, anyway, it's called Be Careful What You Wish For, Orangutan. From apes to apps, through redesigned appendages, we have progressed. Thumbs, brains, occupied. Buzz, buzz, the insect life goes on. Bacteria await. Animals and flowers have their day. We too must wait, must move along. But in the meantime, goals and aspirations keep us busy. We are kind sometimes, raise the bar on good days, move the goalposts on others. So welcome, citizen. You are provisionally one of us. Learn to tell lies. Have reasonable fun at the fun fair. Go shopping. Enjoy the revolving door. Lose the frown. Ride the escalator. Up and up and down. Seeing the way in which they test whether chimps and orangutans and gorillas have anything close to our intelligence, they teach them to tell lies. And if they can learn to tell lies, then that means they're as intelligent as us. This is true. My collection session are poems all about music, especially Irish traditional music, but there's lots of poems that have voices of animals, or imaginary voices of animals. There's voices from insects and mammals and loads of birds and even starfish. But in this one, it's the cows we try to tune into. Requiem. The cows have gathered in an adjacent field. I can see their shapes in the moonlight. A meeting of the tribes. They are here in their multiplicity. Black, brown, black and white. Some all white, like ghosts or recent converts. Just now I heard a moan from one of them. that had me awake as if I'd been shot. It's the night before their calves are taken. They know from the look in the farmer's eyes. They call him by name, although it sounds like moo to us. I listen at the window to their keening. We make recordings of whales and dolphins, say they are a higher species, as close to us as nature gets. But the cows are singing in their camp, refusing to be cattle, marking their loss, celebrating the grass, thanking the rain. The females, even the males most of the time, are gentle, considerate, abiding. But tonight, the cows have run out of patience, can ruminate no longer. They sing their mass, make ready for battle. Tomorrow, they will paint themselves red. Attack.
Wow.
So maybe a poem about human beings. Cork, city of jazz. I remember last time I was down, we went to a jazz club afterwards. I don't think we'll do that tonight, but anyway, I do remember going to a jazz venue. Yeah, was that around the corner here somewhere?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So this is called First.
So sorry.
It's okay. This is called First Jazz, and it's very much my first memories of jazz. First Jazz. Coltrane, cool train, taking vinyl track with swerve and verve, hip dip, curve of lip and gravity, bending light with thumb and fingertip on moon reflecting keys. Take a winding scale from the black bottom of a southern swamp, up past a levee camp moan through a blood red foam to the cold blue gates of heaven. Levitate a while, like a hummingbird, a backbeat drumming bird, then deviate on the A train, pile back on the coal train. The engine picking up steam, hear that bell ring, tip your high hat to the blind engineer, catch a rattlesnake snare, then a rumble and tumble and a drop below with a blast so low you go down into the molten heat and heartbeat of this crazy giant, where two and two make five, feeling in this moment only you are truly alive.
Yeah.
I thought keep a sort of musical thing going, maybe a kind of link. Any Neil Young fans here?
Yes.
Okay, good. So this is from a collection of Father's Day, and this is about, I decided to take my dad to a Neil Young concert, which seemed like a great idea at the time. And then, you know, after a while I kind of wasn't sure whether this really was. Anyway, it's called Tonight's the Night, and there was a particular tour where that coincided with his Tonight's the Night album. And it was called Tonight's the Night. I took Dad to see Neil Young. He wore a suit. Dad, that is. Neil Young wore a tie-dye shirt. 1975, I think. Bristol, Colston Hall. Crazy Neil with Crazy Horse. And crazy me for bringing Dad. But he'd taken me to Cheddar Caves, Castle Coombe, and over on the ferry to South Wales. Again, Dad, not Neil Young. He hadn't taken me anywhere yet. So I wanted to show him something. Even though his taste in music began and ended with Bing Crosby. Definitely Dad, not Neil Young. Whose influences will be more blues, roots, country, and rock and roll. And he was cross. Neil this time. My dad was surprisingly mellow, if somewhat conspicuous. They started with a brand new song called Tonight's the Night, which the audience heckled, wanting more familiar tunes like Southern Man, Helpless, and Cowgirl in the Sand. But Neil was having none of it. He gave us all a lecture how this was about someone real close to him, a roadie who had died from drugs. Bruce Berry was a working man. And he sang it again, only more aggressive, which pissed the audience off even more. I was hoping Dad was okay, not feeling out of place, but he seemed to be taking it all in, even nodding his silver head through the deranged 20-minute guitar solos. Eventually there was a compromise. The band won us over by doing all the old hits, but then for an encore, did Tonight's the Night again. I'll never forget it. Afterwards, he brought me a takeaway. Dad, not Neil Young. I don't know what Neil and the band got up to. Maybe they went back to the hotel and talked about an old guy in the third from back row who'd smile all through the concert. Wonder what he was taking. Whatever. I enjoyed myself too. Felt Dad and Neil Young had gotten well together. Bruce Berry was a working man. And yeah, maybe keeping this sort of music link going. In session, the poems are sort of bringing together poetry and music, and traditionally Irish traditional music. And I had this sort of fantasy of Yeats and trying to write a poem, another poem, and with all these kind of influences coming into his head from the poetry tradition, but at the same time being here in the west of Ireland and what was around him as well, wrestling for attention. So this is called Listening. He is sitting in the room, prepared, having set aside the time, musing with that inner eye on a scene not too far away, yet another shore, as water laps with a measured pulse, inviting aural speculation. The way nature will accommodate some ambulant ebb and flow, while on other days the insistent rap of a heart or drum. He breaks it into a rolling four, then five. Iambic, surely, once it's slow, unhurried, as codes of literary modes and form wrestle for attention, the stresses slipping into place, spaced and even. And yet, today it feels too flat, too Greek, too pat. It annoys him. He opens the window, lets in real air. Here's the wind in the trees, and further still, Jimmy's fiddle down at the cross, horsehair on wood. Should he make off headstrong to the woods, seek out haze or oracle, become ash-wise? Or rather lose the head, be briar-brained, thresh his way through branch and thorn, wade upstream street through salmon rivers, hurl himself wild upon the grass? His ear cocks to the fiddle again. What if music should take the lead? A reel, too fast. He'd miss the way, or else the pricks would likely tear, and like the hare he'd lose the race. And the old bones are not so nimble. A polka, he'd be leaping into ditches. A waltz, perhaps. Too European, stiff collars and elevated chins. This is an Irish one. A jig, then, and like the fairies, he'd hop and skip, alternate step, and have the critics scratching their noodles. Or run with the fox, slipping into 9/8, have them pulling out their hair. Jimmy glides into another tune, this time a count of four, but yet the sound of three, four sets of three. He has it, fiddlesticks to reasoning, let literature abide, follow the rule of the bow in a slide. And then, completing this little section, I suppose a sort of musical section, this poem, there's lots of poems here about fiddlers and flute players and lots of different instruments, but this one is about a piper. And I was in Galway in the Roisin Dubh one time, and I was waiting for a gig to start, and this session to start, and this piper came out and he was getting his gear together. And I just had this moment of seeing somebody else, another life somewhere else. So these are like two lives sort of juxtaposed over each other. A piper prepares. It's almost like shooting up. A captivating ritual. The belt looped around the forearm. Buckle notched. Blowpipe joined to leather bag. Shard of cloth. Folded between elbow and rib for comfort. Trusted talisman. Guardian against the unknown. And unnamed. Keys, bars with no endings. Drones are attached like pistol silencers. Poised. And now, the popping strap. The piper's apron. A leather patch spread across the thigh. You'd think for protection from the crazed jabs of the chanter. Its manic hypodermic dance. In fact, the placing there will cause a glottal stop. Suspension of sound. A near death. Allowing trap door drop down the pitch shaft to the octave, to low D, belly forge, bass underworld, from where a primal hum vibrates, connects, fixes on the spinal cord, sends a hit exploding into the skull's chamber. The head reels, a gasp for air, as the bellows fill, and suddenly there's life in the lungs and wind in the reeds. Escape, we're up and away, tripping over the scales, flying above the walls of Limerick, a never-ending siege of Ennis, hello and goodbye to Rocky Road, wheels of the world, hills and spills of Donegal, heading towards a high, high dome. Two more, I think. Thank you. My in my collection of Father's Day, it's a kind of collection about fathers, being a father, having a father, and there's quite a few female voices in here too, but there's it's mostly about fathers, and it starts off with a poem about trying to buy a Father's Day card in Easton's in Galway. You have Easton's here, don't you? Of course. You have more than one?
One.
Yeah, just one. Yeah. And we've one in the city. Yeah, okay. I think I have three in Limerick. Anyway, this is in Easton's in Galway. There's two floors, and for some reason there's an escalator going up, but there's so many stairs coming down. So that comes into the poem. Just it's probably different than Cork. You probably is it the same?
Yeah.
Is it? Now, there must be some reason for it. Yeah. Right? It must be deals with the subject.
Maybe if they're stealing the first one, they have to run to get down on the spot. Maybe, maybe Jessica Neal is going fast, maybe.
No, that might be it. It's conspiracy theory. Definitely. No. Somebody should investigate. This is called Father's Day Reprise. So I'm back again in the second half of the book with another attempt to buy a card. The next time I'm in Easton's, I hang around downstairs for a while, browsing through Dante's Inferno. So I feel more buoyed and cheerful, up and ready for it. Ascend the escalator, relaxed, as in the Paradiso. A smile on my face. I can tell, because today I stand still and allow the moving metal to carry me. I get to the top and bump into the back of another man who has stopped dead. He seems afraid to get off and is backpedaling as fast as he can. It's like a moonwalk routine. And I have to do it too. I feel hands on my hips. And now there's a line of us in a conga all moon dancing. One small step, the man said, but this one is huge. We stretch out into the street. Passers-by think it's a parade, practicing for Paddy's Day. But no. This is for Father's Day. We have all come to pay our tributes and respects. Now the security guard is taking the man at the front in his arms, lifting him to safety, bearing him like a lover, a hug to die for. Then it's a rush to buy our cards. One fellow is ancient. He looks like Rip Van Winkle, white beard dragging on the floor. Surely your father can't be still alive, I say. He tells me the card is for himself. He buys several every year. One from each of his children. Are they all dead, I ask? To me, he replies. I say nothing. We're all searching for our fathers, reaching for the right words, an appropriate image. There are pictures of golf, football. I'm hoping for a lawnmower, amazed to find one. But the message inside puts me off, too religious. After all, it's my own father I'm looking for. I'm almost settling for an empty chair, when I spot something. The message says, well done, you've passed your test. And I realise I've wandered into another section and suddenly feel dizzy, sensing one more false move I could be falling through hoops into McNeese's soap suds or take a wrong turn and end up like Dante in a nightmare parallel world where the cards read, hard luck, you failed. Miserable birthday. Christmas condolences. Commiserations on your wedding. I realise I'm being observed. There's a man eyeing me from behind the stationery. It isn't the security guard, because he's still giving bear hugs to needy fathers stepping off the escalator. I'm thinking Easton should give him a pay rise at least. No, this man looks like a Cold War spy, tough and uncompromising. I notice his umbrella has a sharp point. I know why he's here. He has been sent by my father to see if I'm buying him a car. I return my attention to the greeting. Perhaps I will choose a funny one after all. Sorry, Dad, forgot to buy you a card. Ha ha. Dad rhymes with sad, mad, grad, cad, bad, had. Knock, knock. Who's there? Dad, Dad, who? And now, as if a hooter astounded, we grab our cards, descend the stairs en masse. There is no down escalator in Easton's Galway. We will take you up, but you will have to bring yourself down. A strange subliminal message. And there is the security guard, back in his spot by the door, flexing his lips and eyebrows as if nothing has happened, staring straight ahead, like men do, at urinals. I imagine it's part of the training, and I know that everything is back to normal. The next person getting a bear hug will be some poor soul who was in a moment of weakness, failed to pay for his copy of New Scientist, DIY Weekly, or Men's Health. Outside, the buskers are playing, the rain is falling, and I feel a sudden urge to shake hands with a man coming towards me, a complete stranger. I'm thinking, why not? I will offer my hand before we end up killing each other. Finish with this one. I suppose that's got a kind of slight kind of feeling of loss or mortality or anyway, this is the last one, is cheerful mortality. more cheerful mortality poem. And it's called the Bubble Wrap Blues. And so you know, but I'm just in case anyone remembers this, I don't think it's literally, I do not want this on my coffin, thank you. I quite like the Yeats thing, that horseman thing, it's kind of nice, you know. Anyway, this is called the Bubble Wrap Blues. Actually, I'm going to ask you to join in. Could you help me with the last line? Yeah? So when we get, all you're going to do is the last line is, bury me in bubble wrap. Can we try that? Yeah.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
Brilliant, okay. Bubble Wrap Blues. Stack up the coffin boards, pack away the nails, moor that boat for Avalon, lower down the sails. Place me on a bed of foam before I take a nap. Swaddle me in comfort.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
Take down the big marquee, pay off the cabaret. Cancel the choir boys and girls, come back another day. Hold back the holy waters, the tree bark with no sap. Let a band of homeless sing.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
No bankers to hold the handles, no regulator prayers, no corporate greed to drive the hearse, no soft landing soothsayers, no message from our leader, no sentimental crap. Give me a dry-eyed crocodile.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
If I rage into the night, can't take it on the chin, find it all too much to bear and go without a grin, let the feelings run and run like a leaking tap. Lend me a suit of armour.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
Farewell world, it's been a gas, a never-ending joke. Banana skins to beat the band, fun-loving goats to poke. Laugh me forward to my spot, place me in the trap. Bundle me in comedy.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
Life is just a holiday, a brief relief from nothing. Huff and puff and other stuff, we get by on bluffing. But even an off performance deserves a slow hand clap. Minimize the damage.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
What's done is done, no mileage in regret. If it wasn't exactly all my way, too late to get upset. The exit doors are beckoning, time to mind the gap. Don't spare the layers.
Bury me in bubble wrap.
You were great, that was brilliant. Thank
you.
Thank you very much.